All right, if you have a Bible, I need you to go ahead and turn to chapter 37. Okay, chapter 37. And let you see tonight where we're going. I share with you a little bit. You know, when you take such a long look, basically 15 chapters, depends on which ones you count, of the scriptures, and these 15, it has the most, to me, it has the most future look of most passages, especially within the story itself. And we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight, just as we kind of kick this off with this kind of second part of what I'm doing of Joseph's life, but in reality, it's the first part. And you have to remember, if you've been up here through this time, I'm not even going to try to do a recap of where we've been, other than telling you this, that his father was a deceiver and was a great deceiver. He was a cheat. He was a liar. And I want you to know that God changed his life. But it was later, and so he had to work. God had to work a lot in his life. But remember that Joseph was born much later, after his father had already come through the Bethel experience, which was where he became a believer, and then the El Bethel experience, where he came back to God, and pretty much from there was served the Lord from then on. Not that he was perfect, not that any of us are perfect, but Joseph, since he was kind of a kid in Jacob's older age, and when you look at that and look at the difference that it makes when your children get to be around you for most of their formative years, when you're a believer and when you're really serving the Lord, it does make a difference. But also remember this, is that through this series of events, Joseph was the first child. He was a firstborn of his wife Rachel, and he had several wives, but Rachel was the one that he loved, and therefore Joseph became a favored son. And that was going to cause problems. And that's really all you need to know as far as recap. I would really encourage you, because if you were able to be here the last few weeks, you'll really begin to pick up on how in the world could these brothers do what they're about to do. So ultimate betrayal is the thought for tonight. Ultimate betrayal. And, you know, the story of Joseph, as we kick it off tonight, it has been one that has intrigued people for centuries. Many books have been written, stage presentations, theater, you know, Broadway even had a big musical, you know, on his life. Different even cartoons, if you will, on Joseph's life, and movies and all kinds of things about this incredible picture of this guy. But it's so interesting because they'll tell the story, but they don't look for the story in the story. And to me, that is what is the most remarkable. And so since we kick this off tonight, I'm going to take a little bit of time to do that. We're going to cover a little bit of this picture, especially his betrayal. But I want you to see the story in the story a whole lot tonight. So we're going to do a little bit of that. We're going to do it actually twice. Once now and then once a little later in his life, because this picture in the picture, as I have loved to tell you and I love to tell you about, is going to be shared tonight. And so as we jump into this, remember this section of Joseph's life, we're just going to entitle, "What Do You Do When Your Life Falls Apart?" Because I want you to know that a lot of times when our life falls apart, it's our own fault, if we have the eyes to see it. But I want you to know that everything that was going to happen to Joseph was not his fault. And you have to understand how God can use that for his purposes. But again, that doesn't help you when you're in the middle of your life falling apart. Joseph was 17 years old when we pick him up in this particular chapter. And a 17-year-old kid. And so he was obviously beloved by his father. He obviously also wanted to do things right, and which it many times, someone who's committed to doing what's right will become a target of most people. Isn't that sad? But it is the truth. Anytime you do something right, or you set out to do something right, you usually will get a target on your back. The great part about it is that by doing what's right and staying according to the truth, you can sleep well. All right? You can sleep well. And so as we take a look at this passage, I want us to see that. Okay. Number one, if you want to take some notes, there'll be some notes tonight. I just give notes not because this is a class or not because this is a lecture, but I have found when I give notes, it helps people follow along in a clear manner with what we're talking about. So number one is what I'm going to call that Jacob's partiality becomes a problem. Just because Jacob loved him the most, that's not Joseph's fault. And in fact, you'll see it here. That he has ten older brothers, and it's interesting that they really just don't care for him. But the main reason that they don't care for him is because his father Jacob, who was renamed Israel, is partial to him. So let's take a look again. We only need to take a look at a little bit for you to see this. But let's take a look at verse three. It says, "Now Israel, that is Jacob." Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his sons. Now, obviously it's a problem, and obviously it's not his fault, but it was all because of Rachel. Okay? It was all because of Rachel. And if you know the backstory of Rachel, the being the one that he loved and wanted to marry and was fooled into marrying another, it's an interesting story. But then you understand this here. But this partiality becomes a problem. Okay? So Joseph was loved more by his father. Number two. Joseph was the father of Joseph was the son of his father's old age. He said that he loved loved Joseph more than all of his other sons because he was the son of his old age. You know, I am the oldest child in my family. I have a little brother who's 10 years younger than I am. We were the only two. And I want you to know, and I'm not bitter about this, but my brother had two totally different parents than I had. I'm here to tell you that when children are born to you when you're older, it's just different. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? I'm not going to have you show of hands of how many of you had children in your old age, because I don't want to get in trouble. But oh, I wasn't old. Okay, I got you. Okay, great. But I found, my parents were in their early 20s when they had me. And my dad was as tough as nails. And he mellowed through the years. Again, the dad that my brother had was different than me. And I think it's because, now that I am a parent, I think it's because you make most of your mistakes with the older ones, if you know what I'm talking about. And you learn a whole lot. You know, there's no class to go through on parenting. Yes, you can learn good principles of parenting, but most of it happens when as you're doing it. You know, you can study a whole lot of books on how to ride a bike, but until you go get on the bike, what you've learned doesn't make any sense. And so, again, you have this picture. There's a lot of problems in the early part of Jacob's life. And all these older brothers were around that. But then you have this son who was born in his old age. And oh my goodness, he loved this kid. And number three is that Joseph was made an overseer. You'll see a little bit more of why I say that. But take a look into verse three. And because he was the son of his old age, and it says there that he gave him a coat. Okay? He gave him a coat of many colors. Now, I want you to understand that's not a big deal to us. I look around the room, and we are all wearing clothes of many colors. And so, again, that to us is like, what's the big deal? But you have to remember that the common person at that time, they wore clothing that was whatever the natural color of it was. And to buy dye to have colored clothing was a big deal and very expensive. And so I want you to notice that Joseph was made. Anyway, this coat, you'll find out that all the brothers are out working in the fields. But this coat was not given to Joseph to work in. This was a, you're going to see in some of the things now, is that is that actually he promoted Joseph up to be kind of the overseer of his brothers. And let me tell you what, that doesn't go over very well. You know, the little brother being in charge just doesn't usually go over well. And I understand that, okay, being the older. But this caused all kinds of problems, obviously, as you can imagine. When you think about that Jacob's partiality, which was shown through this, obviously was a big difference. Now again, none of these are Joseph's fault. I'm not sure what Joseph could have done through any of them, other than honor his father and do what his father, you know, wanted him to do. Number two, Joseph had a pure life. Okay? He had a pure life. He had a life, in fact, when I say a pure life, he had a desire to do what's right. I think personally that he had a relationship with God from an early age, or he could have not endured and gone through what he was about to go through without bitterness setting in. And so, Joseph was just a kid, you know, that I think that had begun to follow the Lord and was one who did follow the Lord and had a desire to do the things in his life that would honor God and would honor his parents. But remember, as I just told you, that's not always. I mean, yeah, we talk about this all the time. You just got to do what's right. Just do what's right. Just do what's right. Everybody talks about it. But when you get yourself into the position to where you're not going to be a real popular guy by doing what's right, it's a different ballgame. I remember one time that when Martha and I got married, and I've told some of you this story, before we got married, she was still in college. And so we had made an agreement, a promise to her parents that she would finish college. And so, and I'm glad we made that promise, because she would have never finished college if we hadn't made the promise, because we wound up having to, you know, 9 months after we were married, we found out we were expecting. And so Martha graduated college with an 18-month-old. And so we probably would not have, but I'm glad that we did. And so, but anyway, she had to take these different classes. And at the time, things are changing now, though. But at the time, you had to take so many PE classes. And so she took tennis. And I remember that part of the tennis class is, the first part of the class was they showed you the strokes and everything. And the second part is that you had a tournament with all of your classmates. And everybody played one another. And so you had to meet, obviously, outside of class and play games and then report your scores. Well, a lot of people in the class just got together and said, hey, guys, let's just make up scores. That way we don't have to go out there and play. Right? Easy. You know? Okay, who wants to win today? Oh, you want to win today? Okay, you won this one. And so, again, that sounds silly to you, but it's a small decision that you make then that's going to follow you. So the question comes down, are you going to do what's right? Oh, Jeff, tennis doesn't matter. But doesn't it? Right? You see, it's real easy to say, well, I want to do what's right, I want to do what's right. Yeah, but what happens when you face this picture? Martha saw no way out of it because she couldn't get anybody to play her. They wouldn't show up, so how do you do this? So she didn't have any choice but to go tell the teacher, hey, listen, I can't get anybody to play me. Well, do they not like you? And it's, no, it's just that none of them are playing. You know, what else could she do? There was nothing else she could do. But let me tell you what, after she did tell that, she was not a real popular person in the tennis class. Does anybody know what I'm talking about? And I tell you what, that microcosm, that small little picture that seems insignificant there, can make a much bigger deal somewhere else. When you're at the office and you're told you need to redo those numbers. Or when you're told you need to tell those people that you're selling that to that this product will do this, 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 and this, and you know it won't. Then it begins to make more sense. But when I say that Joseph began to be persecuted because he was trying to do what was right, that's exactly what happened. And it was really that and his father's favoritism that got him into trouble. Being in trouble for doing what's right. Okay? So let's take a look at the passage. So look at Joseph's pure life. Look at verse 2. Now these are the generations, so we're going back a verse. These are generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock with his brothers. And he was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. Those were the two servant girls, right? Those were the two servant girls, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. Same situation, right? They're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. We don't know what the bad report is. But many people have tried to tag this as being a tattletale or a rat or a whistleblower, whatever you want to call it, whatever they call people today. But I look at it totally different. I look at it as that his desire was to honor his dad. And these brothers were not doing what was honoring the dad. And so what choice did he have other than just playing along and going along with this? So it gives you a little bit of look into Joseph's life. You know, you want to be applauded for doing what's right, but I'm here to tell you over the long haul, you will have a reputation that is respected. But it just takes a while for that to happen. Right? And so that's what happened. And so that becomes obviously a picture of his life. Number two is what I'm going to call Joseph's persecuted life. Now look down, if you will, in verse 14. Well, let's look at 14, and then you'll take a look into what happened. So this is what he said. That is, Jacob said to Joseph. So he said to him, "Go now and see if it is well with your brothers and with the flock, and bring me word." So he sent him from the valley of Hebron, and he came to Shechem. Now I want you to understand, the brothers are out working, right? And the brothers are out taking care of the flocks. Obviously, Joseph is at home. He's kind of the one that Jacob keeps at home, and then he kind of sends him out as a supervisor. That's why he said he made him an overseer. So he sends him out to check on his older brothers. And then, obviously, this will help you. Let's skip back up to verse 4. And it says, "But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all the other brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peacefully to him." So the reason for their hatred, it was not Joseph's fault, but the reason was because their father showed favoritism to him. Look at verse 8. And obviously, well, let me tell you a little bit of this before I go reading. He began to have dreams, different dreams. God began to show him amazing things about these dreams. And you know, you have the stars, you know, and all the stars, you know, bowed down to my star. And then the sheaves, and then all the brothers had a sheave, and they all bowed down to my sheave. And obviously, God was showing him the future and showing him what was going to happen. He probably could have thought better than sharing it. But when you're 17, my goodness. All right, and so let's take a look now at what happened. Take a look in verse 8. "And his brothers said, 'Are you indeed going to reign over us? Or are you indeed going to rule over us?' So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words." So, again, this set up the entire problem. Okay? This set up the entire problem. Which brings us down to most of the rest of everything I want to talk to you about is going to be under Joseph's persecuted life. But take a look at verse 18. So he sends him. He sends him out to go check on his brothers. But I went back and kind of dotted in on some of the things just because I knew we were going to run out of time if I went through everything. And so I wanted you to see this build up. And this anger and hatred, I'm here to tell you, and this is another message for another time, but I'm here to tell you, anger, hatred, bitterness turns into some terrible things if you harbor them in your life. And you're going to see these brothers do something terrible because they harbored this resentment and anger All right, and hatred. Most of us believe that we're justified in hatred. And I want you to hear me. You may be. But remember this. Hatred destroys you, not the other person. It's like sand in an engine block. And when you, that's why the scripture says to love, right? And because of what it's going to do to you, well, you're about to see the effects of what happens to it. So what happens? He sends them. He sends Joseph out, and so Joseph goes like he's supposed to, and he's going out. And listen to what happened. Look at verse 18. We're going to read down through some of this. And they saw him from afar, and before he came near to them, they conspired against him to kill him. So you got all these brothers working hard, living out in the fields with the flocks, right? And they look up and they see Joseph coming from afar. How do they know it's Joseph? Well, it's that many-colored coat. I mean, he sticks out like a sore thumb. It's like, you know, it's like driving a red Mustang and a policeman looking at you, right? They're going to look at the red Mustang because they know it'll go fast, and red has that picture to it. Okay, it's the same thing. They look up and they see this kid, man, kid, and they see him from afar. And so as he's coming, it's probably going to take him another 5-10 minutes to get there. But as they see him coming, they begin to conspire with one another about what are we going to do. Let's continue to read. And they said to one another, here comes the dreamer. Here comes the dreamer. They had all kinds of pet names for him, I'm sure. Here comes the dreamer. Come now. Let us kill him and throw him into one of the pits. Okay, this is where hatred and bitterness go to. You know, it's interesting when Jesus changed, when he changed the look for people to understand what sin really is and what the commandments really meant. And when he talked about hatred, Jesus said, you've already murdered them in your heart. Right? You've already, it's just the opportunity or the fear of getting caught that has kept you from doing it. And so you have this picture of these brothers saying, hey, let's kill him and let's throw him in a pit. Let's continue to read. And then we will say that a fierce animal has devoured him. And then we will see what becomes of his dreams. But Reuben, now if you remember Reuben was the oldest. He was the firstborn. Now Reuben, I want you to hear what he said, heard it, and he rescued him out of their hands, saying, let us not take his life. And Reuben said to them, shed no blood, throw him into the pit here in the wilderness, but do not lay a hand on him, that he might rescue him out of their hand and restore him to his father. So he's like, oh yeah, we can't kill him, guys. That's going a little far. Let's just throw him in the pit. And then his brain thought, after everybody goes to sleep or whatever, he'll go rescue him and make sure he gets him away so he can get him back to his dad. So Reuben was one of the only ones that was not in on it. And so they throw him into this pit. All right, let's continue. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the robe of many colors that he wore. So the very thing that they hated the most, they stripped it off of him. And it says that they took him and threw him into a pit. And the pit was empty and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat. Pretty callous too. But continue to read. And looking up, they saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from Gilead, where their camels with their camels bearing gum, balm, myrrh, and they were on their way to carry it down to Egypt. Verse 26, then Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it that we kill our brother and conceal his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites, and let not our hand be upon him, for he is our brother. In other words, hey, let's not kill him, guys. You remember, he is our brother. Let's just sell him into slavery. Oh, that's compassion at its best, right? And so Judah comes up with all of these things. Obviously, Judah was the lion of the tribe of Judah. That was going to be the eventual, obviously, the descendant of Christ. But it's Judah is the one that does this. All right. And basically, let's take a look at it. Then, and his brothers listened to him. And the Midianite traders passed by, and they drew Joseph up and lifted him out of the pit, sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 shekels of silver, and they took Joseph to Egypt. And when Reuben returned to the pit and saw that Joseph was not in the pit, he tore his clothes and returned to his brothers and said, "The boy is gone, and I, where shall I go?" And then they took Joseph's robe, they slaughtered a goat, and they dipped the robe in the blood. And they sent the robe of many colors and brought it to their father and said, "This we found. Please identify whether this is your son's robe or not." And he identified it and said, "It is my son's robe. A fierce animal has devoured him. And Joseph is without doubt torn to pieces." All right, verse 34. And Jacob tore his garments and put sackcloth on his loins, and he basically mourned for his son many days. And all of his sons and all of his daughters rose to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted and said, "No, I shall go down to the grave or Sheol to my son mourning." Thus his father wept for him. Meanwhile, the Midianites sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. So you have this hatred, you have this envy, you have all of these things, and then you have this plot where he's thrown into a cistern and they're just trying to figure out what they want to do to him. They tore off his clothes, and then they came up with this deceitful plot, which, hey guys, I wonder where they came up with being deceitful. But if you remember, that's what they learned growing up. And Jacob is still paying for a lot of his mistakes. A lot of his bad mistakes. But it's incredible how that all is not lost. God has a plan here. But boy, you sure can't see it now. You have to remember that when Joseph is going through all this, and eventually when he gets to slavery and eventual prison, you have to remember he hasn't read chapter 50 yet. He doesn't know what's coming. He's going through it now. And we're going to talk more about that in weeks to come. What do you do? What do you do when your life falls apart? What do you do? I'm here to tell you. I can already tell you what you'll do. You'll lean on whatever your faith is in. That's what you do when your life falls apart. Where do you go? What do you do? Who do you lean on? What do you lean on? Where do you go for comfort? It's those things that you go to. But remember, Joseph didn't have anything. I've thought about this many times about myself. You know, even though I was the oldest, but trying to put myself in Joseph's position and kind of knowing my, especially the way I was before I became a believer, I'm not sure I would come out of that without a whole lot of anger and bitterness. But when it comes down to it, I'm here to tell you, don't miss the next couple of weeks, because Joseph shows us how that when people do us wrong and do us terribly wrong, how do you not let that be the total defining thing of your life? Because I'm here to tell you that this event right here could have been the defining moment in Joseph's life and put him on a path, not a good path, but a path that he would never get over the rest of their life. I know, because I've seen it in people's lives now for years. Something that happened way back when, or something that just happened recently. But it winds up becoming the very thing that destroys everything else as you go forward. So don't miss next week. You're going to really see, you know, how does a guy, really the next couple of weeks, how do you overcome things like that? But tonight, I wanted to kind of pause with the story. So we're just kind of doing an intro to it. And I just want to kind of back up a little bit here and talk to you about some pictures here, which is number three. Okay? If you're taking down notes, Joseph is a picture of the future. It's a picture within a picture. Let me tell you what I mean, okay? Take a look at the screen here real quick. Show us the first one, all right? Hoop. One, two, three. Hoop. All right, now, that seems like, you know, a pretty cool look. But he's just looking over. But do you see the baby? It's a picture within a picture. Take a look at the next one. All right. Scuba divers, you know, fish. But do you see the two faces? One's fairly easy to see, the one on the left. But do you see the one over here? So, when you first glance at it, you're just looking at it and you're saying, okay, it's divers swimming, it's fish going around. But there's also a picture within a picture. The last one, we kind of pulled this one off, kind of an advertisement kind of thing. Obviously, it's Spartan Golf Club. And you see the soldier, the Spartan and the soldier. But in reality, you look at it again, and it's a golfer with a swing, right? So you have this picture. But in reality, within the picture, there's another picture. And I want you to see that. I don't know if there's anyone else's life in the scriptures that are quite like Joseph's, that the picture of Christ is within his life. So much seems strange, but for those of you who have ears to hear and eyes to see this, for so much you understand this, God is writing a story within a story here. And he's given you a pretty good setup of things that were to come. Although at the time, and for generations, okay, for really several, you know, a couple of thousand years, this was not going to actually come true. And so for generations, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, as they read the book of Genesis, as they read the end, the Jewish people read the end, the final chapters of chapter 50, it was just a picture of Joseph and how God in his providence had saved the nation of Israel. This is how you know what the scriptures teach us is the truth. If you want to know, just take a look. All right, let's just kind of walk down through some of the comparisons. Okay, number one, are you ready? Number one, he was beloved by his father. All right, he was beloved by his father. This is my beloved son, right? This is my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. So when you take a look, that's in Matthew chapter 17, verse 5. So let's just kind of chart these. Jeff, well, lots of sons love. Okay, all right. Just wanted to start there. Let's move on. Number two. He was hated and envied by his brothers. Okay? So when you take a look at this, this kind of walk bound through it, it'll begin to match up in just a minute. But obviously, his own Israel turned away from who Christ is, their very Messiah. You, mainly the religious, we've been going through the Gospel of John on Wednesday nights, but it was mainly by the religious leaders. Pretty amazing that those who said that they loved God were the very ones that portrayed him, okay, that hated him. Number three, he was sent by his father to the brothers. Okay, got the picture? He was with his father. And the father sent him to the brothers. Okay? Obviously, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. God did not send his son into the world to condemn the world, but that through his son they might be saved. Remember those verses. Because I'll give you some pictures later in this series. Okay? Number four. Joseph was conspired against, mocked, and basically hated. You can see that in Matthew. Okay? You can see that in Matthew, in the Matthew passage. Right? In Matthew, let me give you the Matthew 12, verse 14. This makes sense. He was, obviously, Jesus was conspired. Jesus was conspired against. Obviously, they planned how they might kill him, how they might accuse him. He was conspired against most of his life, especially his ministry. So Joseph was coming, and they began to conspire against him. Number four, they stripped him of his garments. They stripped him of his garments. Number six, Joseph was sold for 20 pieces of silver. He was betrayed for 20 pieces of silver. Obviously, Jesus was betrayed by 30 pieces of silver. But think about this. Joseph was betrayed by Judah. And who was Jesus betrayed by? It's the same name, guys, by the way. It's like the book of Jude in the New Testament. That just is a nice way of saying Judas. It was just hard to have a book of the Bible called Judas when they put a name to it, right? Same name. Jude, depending on how you say it, same thing. And so you have this incredible picture that is being shared here. Number 7, he goes to Egypt and will one day be their savior. Honey, have you ever thought about why Jesus and his parents had to go to Egypt, right? You know, because Herod was trying to kill him. We know that piece. But there's this picture that God is in. So Jesus went and lived a while in Egypt, and then he came back out of Egypt. But remember this, as you look at it, and you're going to see even more through it, that God sent his son, God, his beloved son, into the world to us, to the brothers. And they mocked and betrayed and conspired against him and sold him. The very ones the very one that they treated that way would be the one who one day would save their lives. For those of you who have ears to hear. And again, there's so much more. I just wanted to stop now because this is right at the beginning. And I didn't want you to forget this piece. And the other parts we'll look later. There's about 8 or 9 more of those as we look later at his life. But I wanted to tell you now, so through the weeks, you can kind of just mark it down. That every week, just be looking. Because see, Joseph, the reason Joseph is given so many chapters of the scriptures is because of his life. And he's such a transitional character. Remember that there's a huge gap between Genesis 50 and Exodus 1. About the same amount of time as between Malachi and Matthew. Over 400 years. And so everything kind of ends for a while with Joseph. And God is kind of putting a crescendo of this first chunk of the scriptures. And when you take a look at Jesus' life, there are other incredible pictures of Christ, pictures within pictures. There are incredible things all over the Old Testament. Passover is one of them. I'd love to share those things with you, by the way. We did a whole series one time of pictures of Jesus in the Old Testament. That's been several years ago. I love people seeing those things because you can't, I mean, you got to remember that the Bible is written over hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And yet the unity of it coming together is unbelievable. When you think that there's probably about at least 1,500 years, perhaps even closer to 1,800 years between the time of Joseph, okay, and the time of Jesus. 1,800 years. And yet you've got this picture that's unmistakable. Is that God, Joseph winds up making a statement at the end of Genesis and said, God sent me to Egypt to save your life. In other words, Joseph saw it. Joseph saw it. And he looks at him, he says, you intended it for evil. But God made something good out of it. And that is the saving of your life and really of the saving of the entire nation of Israel. Which when they moved to Egypt, there was only about 70 of them. So putting those things together, as we just kick off, obviously the foundational story here of Joseph's life, and we're going to keep hitting that over the next weeks. But I wanted to pause just a moment tonight and just let you see here at the beginning, to make sure that you start. I'll try to point it out along the way. But we'll hit another. In fact, one of the last messages I'm going to do in this series is called The Gospel According to Joseph. Because there's so much of a picture of it, the gospel, in Joseph's life. So as we close tonight, If there's never been a time in your life you put your faith and trust in Christ, understand that that God's Word, in the beginning was the Word, it is there and it proves what it is by the things that it says. Okay? For those of you who have ears to hear. And if there's never been a time in your life you put your faith and trust in what God has sent to you, even if you've rejected it in times past, I'm here to tell you, Joseph's brothers rejected it. I'm here to tell you that the nation of Israel rejected it, and people are still rejecting it today. But the question is not whether you're going to, if you reject or accept, is do you understand, do you see it? And when you do put your faith and trust in it, you become His. Because when His brothers did put their faith and trust in Joseph, their lives were changed. They moved to Egypt, and they went from starving, poor shepherds to wealthy royalty, basically. Again, the parallels go on and on. We'll hit more of it as the weeks come. So if there's never been a time in your life you put your faith and trust in Him, be some pastors up here afterwards. Love to talk to you about what it means. But as believers, if you are a believer here tonight, I just wanted your faith to be strengthened as you begin to take a look, is that there isn't a wasted word in the Bible. God has purposes and reasons for it all. All right? Amen?